Thank you so much, Samira. It's really an honor to be speaking here, and I'm so impressed by what you've built here at Leila and OU Israel. It's an honor. And thank you to everyone who's joining here. I see a few familiar faces, and I hope to get to meet the rest of you. Isaacif, yes, and thank you to everyone who's joining us, not in the building, in spirit. I think there's source sheets that were included in your packet, so that's probably going to help you follow. The title of this year is Ascents and Descents, we were just learning beautifully about Yerushalayim and the reconquest or the liberation of Jerusalem in 1967. Of course, our story with Yerushalayim goes back much, much farther. And the truth of the matter is that when we talk about Yerushalayim, we're really talking about two things traditionally. There's Yerushalayim, the stones, the matter, the physical Jerusalem, which of course we imbue to the extent that we can with spirituality that God has given a special kedusha to, sanctity to Yerushalayim. And then there's also heavenly Jerusalem, Yerushalayim Shel Mala, which is a more metaphysical idea. It's a holy spiritual entity. And it says in the Talmud that God is going to come to the spiritual Jerusalem only after God comes to the earthly Jerusalem. And we have a role to play in letting God in, as it were, in making the earthly Jerusalem fitting so that God can dwell here and above, that we can unite Shemayim Va'aretz. And the subject of this shir, which is connected to David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech and Beit HaMikdash and Yerushalayim, is very much about this connection of the high and the low, what's above and what's on the ground, and even, the truth of the matter is, what's beneath the ground. And for that reason, we're actually going to start with Breishit. Our first source here is pretty familiar, I should think. It's the first verse of the Torah. Breishit bara Elokim et ha-shamayim v'et ha-aretz. In the beginning, when God was creating heaven and earth, the aretz hayta tov avohu, right? The world is a hurly-burly. Everything is mixed up. V'choshech al pnei tehom. This is our key word. We're going to keep sight of this idea of tehom. There's darkness over the face of the deep. V'ruach Elokim rachefet al pnei amayim. And the Spirit of God is hovering over the surface of the water. The word tehom, and if you look at it seems a little bit like that word tohu, right? Of hurly-burly. The word tehom, which I'm translating as deep, it can mean the deepest deep, and it can mean the deep waters. And we see that it's connected to the deep waters. First of all, what happens? What's the process that God goes through in creating the world? How is he making order? He's going to distinguish between, right, the rakia. He's going to take the waters that need to be up, and he's going to separate them from the waters that need to be down. And he's also going to separate the waters that belong in the sea from the dry land, right? These are the initial stages of creation are very connected, after light and dark, are very connected to organizing the waters. And these waters of Tehom, the waters that sink into the deep, are not there for as long as we might like to think, right? What's the first evidence that the waters of the Tehom emerge and they come out? Well, let's hear in our second source. It's from Noach. Bishnat shesh me'ot shana l'chayei Noach, in the 600th year of the life of Noach, b'chodesh hasheni, in the second month, b'shiva asar liyom l'chodesh, on the 17th day of the month, b'yom hazeh, on that day, nivka'u kol mayanot tehom rabba. And that day, all of the kind of the inner springs of the great depths split open, varubot hashamayim niftachu, and the ways, the floodgates of the heavens open up. When we think of floods in our world, we often think very much about top down, about rain. I think even when we think about the flood of Noah, the great Mabul, we tend to think about top down the rain. But it's not just that the water is coming from the sky, right, for Noah. The water is also emerging from beneath. It's as though everywhere where water is stored, all the groundwater is being split open and rising to the top. In a sense, what's going on? We're undoing creation. We're undoing the order that Hashem has created in creation and re-merging the waters of above and the waters of below. And that to homecoming out is helping to create that disorder again, almost a sense of tohu within the mabul. We say to home again later on in Breishit. We're not going to look at it together, but it's also when we see that the flood ends, the Tehom comes back, the waters go back down. But the next time we see it is when we get to the bracha for Yosef. When Yaakov blesses all of his children, he blesses Yosef. This is in source number 3, the second line. And one of the brachot that he gives to Yosef is Birchot Shamayim Me'al, the brachot from the heavens above. This is in the second line, the middle of source number 3. And Birchot Tehom Rovetzet Tachat, and the blessings of the Tehom, the deep, the waters of the deep, which are kind of dwelling or couching or getting ready to, at any moment, ready to rise up, which are below. And it's interesting to think about that as a blessing, right? Because from what we've seen so far, it almost seems as if it's something that we only want to stay very far away. By the way, it comes up again, Moshe Rabbeinu. This is one of the brachot where what Moshe Rabbeinu says really echoes what Yaakov Avinu says. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he talks about the bracha for Yosef, says, in source number 4, Mimeged Shamayim Mital, that he's going to be blessed from the bounty of the heaven from dew. Umitahom Rovetzet Tachat. And again, this idea, he's going to be blessed from the waters of the deep. And Radak here explains, I'm going to explain it outside, that basically what's going on is that we need our land to have access to moisture. And that moisture doesn't just come from above. Some of that moisture, and we know this is scientifically true as well, some of that moisture is going to come from below. And the bracha, the way he explains the bracha to Yosef in a very physical way, is that it's a bracha that he's going to have, his land is going to be moist. I find this particularly striking because when we talk about, in Dvarim, when we talk about the difference between Eretz Yisrael and Eretz Mitzrayim, we talk about Eretz Yisrael as being this place where God's eyes are always upon it and deciding whether or not there's going to be rain. We talk about rain all the time. In Kriyat Shema, it's a very constant that we're thinking about the role of rain. And what's so interesting here is that there's also this role of the Tehom. By contrast, Mitzrayim and Egypt is sort of in its own category. What's happening in Mitzrayim? There, they're not as dependent on the rain, but it's not exactly the Tehom either, right? They have this intermediate thing, which is that the Nile overflows and keeps the land like a Gan Hashem. But what we're talking about here is a bracha that not just the rain will fall, but that the appropriate amount of connection to the Tehom will be maintained. Now, there's the sense of connection of the Tehom that would be maintained, we can imagine is like a slow filtering up of the appropriate amount of water. But actually, Chazal talk about a different level of connection. Before I mention that, I should just note source number 6. It's just another citation of Tehom in Tanakh that I found particularly meaningful is Tehillim in Perek Kuftalad is talking about how God is Yasad Eretz Al Nechoneha. God established land on its foundations, Baltimot Lolamved, that should never be destroyed, that should be solid, Tehom Kalavush Kisito. And again, the Tehom is part of, it's dressing the land as it were as a clothing, but the Tehom is a part of God's system for establishing the land to be maintained. So what is our connection to this Tehom, which at first, at least in Breishit, seems very unwieldy and dangerous, and yet we see from Yosef can also be a source of bracha. How do we connect to it? And here's where I'm going to bring up our second key word of today's shiur, and that's the word shitin. Shitin can be taken to mean in general foundations, but there's also a more specific sense of what shitin means. And that has to do, back to Beit HaMikdash, that has to do with where the wine and the water that are brought as libations on the altar flow after they're put on the altar. You ever think about that, right? We're putting all these liquids onto the altar, where the liquids go. There's some who say that also that the blood is also going to be part of the same system. And there are like little silver cups, svalim, and there are canals, like tiny little, and these are called shitin, through which the wine and the time of the water libation on Sukkot, the water, go down. Now, where are they going down to? Here's another meaning of Shittin. I already talked to you about foundations, and I talked to you about this very specific part of the Mizbech. There's also the Shittin that are connecting from there, or somehow connecting the bedrock, Evan Ashtia, to the Tehom. How do I know this? I'm not making it up. Come look with me, source number 7, Gemara and Sukkah. Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabba Bar Bar Chana said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Shittin misheshet yimei breishit nivru'u. The Shittin. Now, he can't mean the actual physical part of the Mizbeach that we built, right? So it sounds like he's talking about here, this connection between the earth and the Tehom, are from Sheshet Imei Breishit created. It's not just that God created the Tehom and he separated out the waters that are going to be below and the waters that are going to be above, but Hashem also created this connection. Shenemar, and it's an interesting proof text, Chamukei Yerechayich Kamo Chalaim Maasei Yedei Uman. This is from Shir HaShirim. The hidden parts of your thighs are like chain links, the thing that is made by a craftsman, huh? Gemara explains, Chamukei Yerechayich, the hidden parts of your thighs, Elu HaShittin, these are the Shittin, this kind of connection, and you can think of the analogy, this kind of connection, think of it as almost moving on the inner part of the bedrock, working its way down. This kind of hidden connection is the Shittin. And then, Kumo Chalaim, like links in a chain, Shemecholulin, the Yordin Ad HaTahom. They're hollow and they go all the way down to the Tehom. The Tehom's always there. The Tehom didn't disappear. It moved, but it's still here. Maasei Yedei Uman, this is the art of the deed of a craftsman. Maasei Yedei Umanuto Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Who created these Shittin? Hashem. And then Rabbi Yishmael says something even stronger. Bereshit, the first word in the Torah. Al tikre Bereshit Ela Barashit. Don't read Bereshit, rather, God created the sheet, this connection. So think about if we go back to the verse. Bereshit, bara Elokim et ha-shamayim ve'aretz, ve'aretz hayta tov v'vo v'choshech al pnei tehom. God is creating, as the initial part of creation, God is putting in what's going to be the connection between this part of lower waters that retain a certain sense of chaos, but also sustain the earth, and what's going to come in the future. Okay, and there's a little bit more here, which is interesting. There's a passage in Sefer Yeshayahu, which talks about, it's a mashal, it's a parable of God has planted a kerem, a vineyard. And within this vineyard, he's tended. And the question is, what kind of fruits or what kind of action is really happening in the vineyard? And here, we're told that the nimshal is a little different from what we usually take it as Yeshayahu. We're told that, in Yeshayahu, it's not that God has planted a vineyard first. First, it says, my precious one, Dodi or Yedidi, my precious one has planted a vineyard. The nimshal, what the meaning of the parable is, well, who's the precious one? That's going to be the precious one is Hashem. Hashem plants the vineyard, and then we're going to be responsible for what fruit the vineyard bears. Okay, and now here's what's interesting. Look at the last line of the source. Vayitaehu sorek, and he puts within it a very choice vine, grapevine, zebet hamikdash. In the center of the vineyard is Beit HaMikdash. Vayiven Migdal B'tocho, a tower within it, that's going to be the Mizbeach, the altar. Vegam Yekev Chatzavbo, Chatzevbo. And he also hewed out a wine press there. Elu HaShittin. These are the Shittin. There's an idea that's emerging from this passage of the Talmud, not just the Shittin are going back to Kadosh Baruch Hu and to creation and connecting to the Tehom, but there's actually a central part of Beit HaMikdash. It's not just something that was then. Beit HaMikdash, when we create the Shittim within, now, did God build it or did we build it? We make the Mizbeach, but after the Mizbeach, it's what Hashem has dealt, it sounds like, right? That part of what we're creating or what we're building on in Beit HaMikdash, in the central spot of the altar, is built on this connection to the lowest low. If Beit HaMikdash is the highest high, the closest we can get to heavenly Yerushalayim in some ways, right? It's not just built on rock. It's built on a connection to this primordial moment of Breshit that God creates, to the Tehom, the Shittim. Okay, that's part one. Part two, I want to remind you of yesterday's Haftarah. Yesterday, we learned about how David HaMelech brings the Aron Kodesh to Yerushalayim amid rejoicing. Now, the next thing that happens in Sefer Shmuel, he's brought the Aron to Yerushalayim. What does he want to do after he's brought it into the tent? What does he realize? Let's build a Beit HaMikdash. That's what I want to do. And is he allowed to build Beit HaMikdash? No, right? He's, at first, it sounds like Natan HaNavi might be allowing him to build Beit HaMikdash. But then he's told he can't. In source number 8, we have the initial response that Hashem says to Natan HaNavi, Ki imlu'u yamecha v'shachavtat avotecha v'akimotat zaracha acharecha. Look, David HaMelech, he's going to live his full life. He's going to part the earth. I'm going to ensure, David HaMelech, that your seed, that your progeny, are going to live beyond you. And Asher yetzei me'echa, those who come out of your, emerge from your loins, v'chinoti et mamlachto. And I will firmly establish, by the way, you notice the word establish? It's interesting to think about. A building has foundations, and also a dynasty has foundations. Beit HaMikdash is a bite. We're going to see this again and again. Beit HaMikdash is a bite, but also, how do we talk about the dynasty? What's the Hebrew or the Tanakh phrase for dynasty? Beit David, the house of David. His foundations are going to come. Hashem is going to give him foundations for his kingship. Hu yivneh bayit lishmi. And that's the one who's coming after you, David. He's the one who's going to build the house in my name. V'chananti et kisei mamlachto ad olam. And I will establish that this is the official dynasty that should be forever. Okay. In Divrei Yamim, we get an additional rationale. We get an explanation beyond just that Hashem said so for why David HaMelech can't build Beit HaMikdash, right? So that's in the second line of source number 9. Vehi alai dvar Hashem lemor. This is David talking. Dam larov shafachta. You've spilled a lot of blood, David. Umilchamot gdolot asita. And you've made a lot of wars. Lo tivne vayit lishmi. You're not going to build the house in my name. Ki damim rabim shafachta arza lefanai. Because much blood have you spilled on the land before me. Now, mind you, Hashem is not saying that the blood that David spilled is all bad, right? Of course, these wars are helping to establish the kingdom and getting us in a position of peace, which is the prerequisite for David HaMelech even beginning to think about bringing the Aron Kodesh to Yerushalayim and to create Beit HaMikdash. It's not that it was wrong of David to fight these wars. And yet, the Beit HaMikdash is supposed to be a place of shalom. Now, what's interesting is if we think about it, we were talking about the opinion a little earlier that there's an opinion that the Shittim don't just carry away the wine and the water, but they also carry away the blood. It's just interesting to think about. They also carry away the blood from Beit HaMikdash. It might be that only the water goes all the way down to the dome, but that the blood might also go at least in the initial part of the Shittim. It's just an interesting, just starting to think about it, an interesting contrast between you've spilled all this blood to the ground and what it is that Beit HaMikdash is going to do with the blood, you know, ultimately, of the sacrifices. Okay. Now, we're going to look at a Gemara passage, both in the Talmud Bavli and in the Talmud Yerushalmi, that takes these threads and brings them together. This reading is Partly inspired by an article I read many years ago by Rav Yehuda Brandis. I have to confess, I tried to look for the article before giving this year, and I couldn't find it again. I'm not sure how much of what I'm going to say is thanks to him and how much of it is mine. So it's a little awkward. So, but Bezrat Hashem will still come out of here with a compelling reading of the Gemara. And the Gemara's heading is Chamesh Esrei Ma'alot. Okay, this is source number 10. Chamesh Esrei Ma'alot, the 15 stairs. The 15 stairs of Beit HaMikdash, which is the Mishnah that the Gemara is talking about, right? We've just been thinking about them in the context of Dayenu, right? Kama Ma'alot Tovot, how many different levels. So these stairs are always connected to a spiritual aspect as well. But the 15 stairs that are going to connect the Ezrat Nashim to the Azara, the women's courtyard to the temple courtyard, the main temple courtyard. And these 15 steps, on each step, there would be stationed a Levi who would be playing music. Now, what this Talmudic passage is going to do is to connect these 15 ma'alot with the 15 shira ma'alot in Tehillim. The idea perhaps being that maybe each Levi on each step would have a different shira ma'alot to perform, that there's a sort of correspondence going on, and all of this connected to the themes that we've been looking at. Amale Rav Chista lahu midrabanan, dehavi kamasader agad takame. So Rav Chista said to a young rabbi who's organizing his knowledge of agadita, of rabbinic lore, before him. Amale shmiel achani chamesh esrei ma'alot keneged miyam ram David. He said to him, have you heard about the 15 ma'alot corresponding to what David said them? So we've already made that leap, right? The Mishnah was talking about the physical stairs back to earthly Jerusalem and heavenly Jerusalem in a sense, right? The Mishnah was talking about the physical stairs. And now the Gemara is already talking about the 15 shira ma'alot in Tehillim. Okay. And now the response is, Amar lehachi amar Rav Yochanan. Here's what Rav Yochanan said. He said it thus, B'sha'a shekara David shitin. At the time at which David dug the shitin. We'll come back to that in a second. Kafa tahoma. The tahom rose up. Ubay lemishtafa alma. And it wanted to soak, to encase in water, to flood the world. Amar David chamesh esrei ma'alot v'horidan. David HaMelech said the 15 shira ma'alot, and it made the waters go down. Now, before we start to talk about what this means put together, let's just take it piece by piece. B'sha'a shekara David shitin, at the time at which David dug the shitin, I have not seen an explicit mention in Tanakh of David digging the shitin. This is clearly a strong rabbinic tradition that he dug the shitin. Rashi here comments, but wait a minute. Where did we see the shitin? Who made the shitin? Didn't Hashem make the shitin? So Rashi gives two possible explanations. He says, look, maybe this is a debate. Maybe there's an opinion that Hashem made it with Breishit, and there's an opinion that David HaMelech makes them. But then he gives another possibility. He says, no, the shitin were there, but they had gotten over the years, they'd gotten clogged with stone, with dirt, right? There isn't a Beit HaMikdash there. It's not being used as a channel for fluid at all. It had been clogged, and David HaMelech is digging it out. Perhaps it might be that the shitin that Hashem makes are lower down, and David HaMelech is making what's a little closer to where he's building. Alternatively, maybe shitin here means the foundations of Beit HaMikdash. But it's clearly not just regular foundations, because when we dig foundations, how deep do we usually go? Right? How deep do you go when you dig out foundations? I mean, it can get pretty deep. Here in Yerushalayim, sometimes they're making a parking garage that's a few stories down. It can feel almost like it's touching the Tehom. It's not touching the Tehom. David HaMelech is digging really deep, extremely deep, profoundly deep. If the extent to which he's digging these foundations or digging out these shitin, he is reaching, he actually reaches the Tehom. He can't build Beit HaMikdash. He can't help construct upwards going straight Shalmala. He's doing something else. He's touching the foundation, the deepest deep. where it begins from the bottom up. He can't build it, but he can't even lay the foundation, but he can excavate the foundation. But this excavation is the biggest excavation that you could possibly do. He's getting all the way to the tomb. And here's the scary part. He's about to upset creation, right? He gets there and the tomb is about to flood the world. And then we have this curious thing. Well, he says Shir Malot, and it goes down. Now, what's Shir Malot? What does Mala mean? We said stair going up. How is he singing Shir Malot and the water goes down? And that's what the Gemara says. It says, hold on a minute. Ihachi, Chamesh Esrei Malot, if that's the case. What do you mean Chamesh Esrei Malot? What do you mean 15 songs of ascent? You adopt me, Baile. We should be talking about going down. Amarle. So now the teacher is correcting the student. He says to him, Hoyoved Kartan, since you brought it up, Hachi Itmar, let me tell you how the story really goes. Okay? The beginning of the story is going to be what we saw. The end of the story is going to be much like we saw, though slightly different in a way that will make Malot make sense. The middle is going to be different. Okay, here we go. B'sha'a shekora David shitin, at the time when David dug out the shitin, kafa tahoma, the tahom rose up, ubala mishtafa alma, and it wanted to flood the world. Amar David, David says, mi ika diyada, Yishari lemechtav shem achatzpa, v'nishtei betoma umanach. Is there someone who knows if it's permissible to write God's name on a piece of, like a potsherd, like a piece of ceramic, to write God's name on such a thing, cast it into the tahom, and that will cause the tahom to rest. It's fascinating because there's no suggestion here of where David HaMelech has this idea, right? David HaMelech somehow knows what to do. It's not clear how he knows what to do, right? But he knows what to do. He's just not sure if it's mutar. Why wouldn't it be mutar to write God's name on this? And I mean, if it's going to save the world, what's the problem? What's the concern? Well, generally speaking, we don't erase God's name. There's a prohibition of erasing God's name. If I'm writing, he doesn't say engraving. If I'm writing God's name or inscribing on a piece of clay, if I'm inscribing God's name on a piece of clay and I'm casting it into a wet place, what's likely to happen to it? God's name would be erased. So interestingly, David HaMelech knows what needs to be done. He needs to cast this piece into the water. We can think a little bit about what it means to cast this piece into the water. What's the piece made of? What's clay made of? But what's the material of clay? It's a combination of earth. Okay. It's a combination of earth and water. And where is he putting this combination of earth and water? It's been baked. It's as though that's going to be the boundary. The boundary, the thing that's going to bound earth and water or recreate the boundary between earth and water is itself constructed of earth and water. But in a way, in a sense, we're also made of the earth, right? We've also got God's neshama. It's a little different. Here, we don't have the Ruach Elohim animating this. This is not going to be a person. What's going to give it the power? I mean, can you imagine? It's like, imagine it's stronger than the image of Pandora's box. The entire tahom is rising up, and you're plugging the tahom with a single piece. How can you do this? What's David HaMelech's suggestion? Why is it going to work? It's not just that it's made of clay. It's because it's got God's name on it. God's name somehow in combination, this combination of earth, water, and the name of God is going to have the power to reestablish the appropriate boundary between us and the tahom. Okay, you're about to see that the Gemara is thinking the way you're thinking. What's your name? But we have an attendee here who said that this reminds her of the Sota ceremony. Think about it. In the Sota ceremony, we have the Megillat Sota, and we grind up and put in liquid the Megillat Sota, which gets drunk by the suspected Sota. That's a case in which God's name is erased. And this is exactly where the Talmud is going. Okay, check it out. Leika dekam Amar Midi, nobody said anything to him. Amar David, David HaMelech says, Kod yada lememar ve'ena omer yechanek begrono. If there's someone here who knows how to answer my question and is just holding back because they want to see me be destroyed, the world be destroyed, whatever it is, if that happens, that person should be cursed with death through strangulation. Pretty harsh, but I mean, the dome is bubbling up. Nasa Achitofel kal v'chomer batzmo. Achitofel is the one who comes with an idea. Now, you'll remember that Achitofel is an advisor to David. He winds up rebelling in the Avshalom rebellion against David. He's an advisor in a sense. In other places, Talmud discusses, in a sense, he's like a Rebbe of David. I think it actually might, yeah, it's another sugya. He's a Rebbe of David HaMelech. He's an advisor of David HaMelech, but he's a little bit hard to control. He's one of those advisors that you don't have a total handle on. At the same time, at Tzatzat Achitofel, when Achitofel gives advice, it's known that it's like almost like the word of Hashem. He's got it. His advice is the best advice, always. Achitofel's advice. And what Achitofel does, he makes a kal v'chomer, he makes it an argument taking from something that's easier case to a tougher case. And it's exactly what you said. Uma la'asot shalom ben ish l'ishto, amra Torah, shmi shenichtav b'kdusha yimachel amayim. And just as in order to create peace between man and wife, the Torah says, my name, which has been written in sanctity, may be destroyed. Divine name can be destroyed in this specific issue. It's instance, it's a mitzvah to destroy the divine name, even though it's usually prohibited, in order to bring peace between man and wife. Shalom l'chol ha'olam kulo, alachad kama v'kama. To make peace for the entire world, how much more so? By the way, again, the theme of peace, Yerushalayim. We need the person of peace to build the actual building, to construct Beit HaMikdash. Here, this is going to be, this is threatening peace, the way that David is digging the foundation or what he's gotten to. If we can't have a solution, we won't have peace. We won't have a world. We're certainly not going to have Beit HaMikdash. Amarle Shari. And Achitofel says, so it's permitted. And that's what David does. Katav Shema Chaspa V'Shari L'Tohoma. He writes the name on the shard and he throws it into the Tohom. V'Nachi Tohoma Shetzer Alfe Garmidi. And the Tohom sinks down 16,000 cubits. What's the problem? It's too low. Why do we know it's too low? We were talking about the bracha of Yosef. What's the bracha of Yosef? We need that tahom rovetz tachat. We can't lose our contact entirely with the tahom. The tahom has to be there too. So what does he do? Kichazi denachi tuva amar. When he sees that it's gone down too much, he says, we need it to come up. As much as I can get it to come up, the world will be appropriately moist. Amar malot garmidi. He says the 15 shir malot, and now they really are malot, right? It brings the water up 15,000 cubits. And now the tahom is at a safe distance of 1,000 cubits from us. And it's this fascinating image that Beit HaMikdash is going to be constructed on this foundation where the Tahom, where perhaps from Breshit, as Rashi says it, from Breshit, Hashem creates a connection at this spot between the land and the Tahom through the Shitin. David HaMelech excavates it as part of excavating the foundations, or perhaps purposefully. We'll see this in a moment. He excavates it. And that connection is underneath the Beit HaMikdash, that moment of the perfect spot where we're both aware keenly of the threat of the Tahom at any given time, of God's power to sustain the Tahom for the sake of peace, and at the same time of the need that the Tahom not be too far away either, that there be a connection both through the Shitin and that there be a connection in some sense throughout the land filtering up. We need this wildness. We can't contain this wildness entirely, but it's also very threatening. And that's almost like on the one hand, above we have Beit HaMikdash with all of its order and all of everything's going in the right spot, right? And the water is going to go specifically in this channel. And this reach up for Yerushalayim Shalmala, but it's built on this deep engagement with not just Yerushalayim Shalmata, but the ultimate Mata, the Tahom. Yes. Thank you very much. So we have this idea running through that somehow, and you know, why is Nisuch HaMayim a Beit HaMikdash? There's a central point that's connected to creation and specifically to water in Beit HaMikdash. Okay, now we don't have a lot of time, but quickly I want to look with you at the Yerushalmi's version of the story, which is a little different. And then I'll summarize for you the remaining sources after we look at that inside, so you can get to the next stage of this morning's proceedings. Okay, here we are, source 11. B'sha'ah sheba David lachpor talmiusim shel Beit HaMikdash. At the time when David went to dig, and this word really just means foundations. David went to dig the foundations of Beit HaMikdash. Chafar chameshasar mavin da'amin. He dug down 1,500 amot. Velo eshkach tehoma, and he didn't find the tehom. You see the difference in the story? The first story, what happened? He dug really deep, and it sounds like he's surprised by the tehom, perhaps. It's not clear. It seems he gets more than he bargained for in the first part of the story. In this part of the story, he's looking for the tehom. He's digging. And he wants to find the tehom. Uvesofa eshkach haratzitz. And at the end of digging things out, he finds a shard or a ceramic piece. Ubar mirmite. He wants the tehom so much, what does he want to do with this piece of clay? The ceramic? He wants to take it up. He sees it. It's there already. In this story, he's not putting it down to contain the tehom. It's there. It's not clear if he knows what it is, but he wants to get to the tehom, and he wants to pick it up. And now there's a conversation. Amar le leitat yachol. The piece itself speaks. And it says, you can't do this. Amar le, lama. David HaMelech says, why not? Amar le, dana hacha kavish al tehoma. I'm conquering. I'm in charge of keeping the tehom at bay. What are you doing? You're unearthing the tehom. Amarle, umina emata tacha. And David says, since when are you here? Amarle, minshata de eshma rachmana kale besinai. From the moment when God made his voice heard at Sinai. This is in Breshit. This is a different moment. Now, Breshit, Hashem might have created created the Shitin. But there's a moment where this shard gets here, according to the story. And the shard doesn't get here, according to the story, only when David's digging up the foundations for Beit HaMikdash. According to the story, the shard goes back to Ma'amad Har Sinai. Why? What's the connection? When he said in Sinai with his voice, Anochi Hashem Alokecha, the moment where God states his own name. Here the name isn't on the shard. Here God stated his name, and what happened? Ra'adit Ara Vishkiat. The land shook, quaked, and sunk down, the ana yayv hacha kavish al tehoma. And this threatens perhaps at that point for the tehom to come up, and I've been put here to seal it. Okay, what should David HaMelech do at this point? What would be the logical thing to do? I would think the thing to do would be to stop. I mean, this really can tie into all kinds of questions we can have about when you're digging and when you're trying to get somewhere and when you're trying to accomplish, how do you know when you've gone too far? How do you know when to stop, right? David HaMelech, one would think, would stop, and it's not what he does. Lo shama. Afa gav ken lo shamale. Even so, doesn't listen. Kevan derime salik doma. Sure enough, he picks up the shard, and the tehom comes up. Uba mitfa oma. And what's it about to do? The whole world again. And then, hava achitofo kaim taman. Achitofel was standing there. Amar Kedain David Mitchanek Va'ana Malich. He said, oh, good. Now David, I'll wait till the Tehom conquers David and strangles him. And then I'll become king in his place. Amar David, at that moment, David says, without hearing him, Man dechacham diyada mikimte, v'lo makim le yesofe mitchanek. May a person who knows how to stop it and doesn't stop it come to the end of strangulation. And then Achitofel, Amar ma de amar ve'okme. Achitofel says something. We don't know what he says. He says something, and that stops the tehom. And that's what stops the Tehom. And now, David, in response, Hitchil David Omer Shira, Shir Amalot, Shir Lamea Olot. Al Kol Mea Ama Haya Omer Shira. He says a shir for every level that the water is not coming and taking over the world. So this story is a little different. One of the things I find most interesting in the story is that it brings Sinai into the whole picture. We've been talking about Breshit and David HaMelech, but the moment of Sinai is also a moment of revelation. And according to the story, the moment of revelation is also a moment that's significant in terms of keeping the Tehom in the right place. It really seems to be that this Tehom, on the one hand, Hashem establishes that it needs to be where it is. On the other hand, he creates a connection to it. And beyond that, there's a way in which it's at these essential moments of Lamala and Lamata, these essential moments of God's presence in the world, or trying to establish God's presence in the world. The Mishkan is Har Sinai, moving along the encampment. Beit HaMikdash is the place where God's going to reveal himself and speak to us from the Kruvim, the way he spoke at Har Sinai. It's at these moments where we're touching on revelation, touching on where we're going most high, that we also encounter the deep. And we also have to create a correct relationship to the deep, a correct relationship to the foundation. I was also thinking as I was preparing this year that maybe it's also connected back to what David HaMelech was saying before, and I'll explain why. When we were talking about why he can't build Beit HaMikdash and what he's done. So again, much of the wars that he waged were correct. We also know that David, especially in the story of Bathsheba, sometimes shed blood in a situation that's not so simple. That's not just purely an act of mitzvah, to put it nicely. And I wonder if part of what's happening is David is acknowledging David's role in this story is that even though he can't build Beit HaMikdash, he has to confront these foundations for himself. Even so, or perhaps he's seeking kapara. And the reason I say this, and I can't tell you, it's speculation, I know. But the reason I say this is because there's a later story, which we don't have time to read right now, but I'll give, you know, when you on your home, if you have a chance, source number 15, there's a later story that talks about Shlomo HaMelech. When Shlomo HaMelech has finally constructed Beit HaMikdash and is establishing Beit HaMikdash, and the Aaron again, he wants to bring the Aaron into Beit HaMikdash. And you see the echo of his father. His father told him, you will be the one who build Beit HaMikdash. That's the will of Hashem. He builds Beit HaMikdash. And he's coming to bring the Aaron in. David could bring the Aaron to Yerushalayim. David could build the Shittin, could dig out the Shittin. He can't build Beit HaMikdash. He can't bring the Aaron into the Mikdash. And at that point, he's not able to do it, Shlomo HaMelech. And the Gemara says that Shlomo tries to accomplish what he needs to accomplish by saying many different languages of tefillah. If you ever looked at Shlomo's tefillah in Beit HaMikdash, it's really long. And one of the things we talk about is how many rinanot, how many languages for tefillah are mentioned in that. He tried to do it by saying all different types of tefillah, and it doesn't work for him. What's ultimately the way in which Shlomo HaMelech is able to bring the Aron in and is granted access? When he ultimately says, and this is the second to last line, Hashem Elokim, al tashev pnei mishichecha, zichra l'chastei David avdecha. Don't turn your anointed one away. Remember the loving kindness of David. He invokes David, and it's when he invokes David, miyad nena. His shir is not responded to on its own. His shir ultimately gets responded to. There's a middle stage where he has to acknowledge that God is the real king and not him. Back to this question between there's Beit David, but the ultimate bite here is a bite for Hashem, and we have to know what's what and who's who. But the final moment of coming in is coming along with a recognition among the Am that David has been granted kapara. That's the moment. So I wonder if part of what's happening in the story of David and digging the Shittin and his passion, at least according to the Yerushalmi, that he's deliberately trying to confront the Tehom, is also perhaps connected to this idea of seeking kapara. And of course, the theme of kapara is being the ultimate moment when Shlomo HaMelech can enter Beit HaMikdash is meaningful because Beit HaMikdash is where we're bringing the sacrifices. And the sacrifices are bringing all of us kapara. And that's also part of an expression of shalom. It's not just peace with others. It's peace between man and God, which is disrupted when we sin and is restored through kapara. And it's that restoration, which now we have to accomplish somehow without Beit HaMikdash, which is ultimately going to be what's going to enable us not just to confront what's below, but also to build Yerushalayim Shamata in a ruchani way, and ultimately Yerushalayim Shamala. Thank you very, very much. Chodesh Tov.